Hi, this is Kendra Adachi from the Lazy Genius podcast, and I am so excited that the new KFC chicken nuggets are here. You have never had nuggets like these before. 100% white meat, hand-breaded in KFC's original recipe, and absolutely delicious. They have become a go-to favorite the kids love to fight over, and I hope they make dinner easier and more fun for you too. Order new Kentucky Fried Chicken Nuggets, now available at participating KFCs near you.
Welcome to Manic Rambling Spiral. I am Heather B. Armstrong.
And I am John R. Bray.
This week we have another guest, and it is not some policy wonk, as someone left a comment and said, I'm tired of the policy wonks coming onto your podcast. No, in fact, we have fellow parent and musician Jesse Cohen from Tan Lines. Tan Lines, you might know if you pay attention to the credits at the end of the podcast. They are responsible for the music for Manic Rambling Spiral. And Jesse is one of the two in the band. Jesse, you play percussion and keyboard, right?
That's right. Hi, thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, I play keyboard, percussion, and then, you know, in the studio, we all do a little bit of everything. But I almost never sing or play guitar, which are the main things that Eric, the other half of Tan Lines, does.
And you guys have released two major full-length albums, correct?
That's right. The first was called Mixed Emotions in 2012, and the second was called Highlights in 2015.
And then you just released an album for kids.
That's right. We did a children's, it's an EP, it's five songs, it's five like classic kids songs that you already know, public domain works like Row, Row, Row Your Boat, in our style, like with synthesizers and with Eric singing and guitar. And yeah, it was just like a fun record that we decided to put out for our kids and for other parents who are struggling to find children's music that will not drive them crazy.
Which is a huge challenge.
The struggle is real. Yes.
Yeah. It's for little kids. It's for like, your kids are probably much, much too old. It's like for 0 to 3 or like whenever they discover Frozen and Moana. I would say they age out of If You're Happy and You Know It.
Well,
John, you saw something. Didn't you read something together? Was it yesterday?
Yes.
About him, about two stay-at-home dads having a ton of free time on their hands.
Yeah, you guys, you've gotten some press on the new record, and it was a good write-up. It was a positive write-up, but one of the comments that irked me as a dad was along the lines of, now that you both have kids and obviously have a ton of free time as stay-at-home dads, you needed something to do.
Yeah, I saw that.
That made me want to throw my phone. It's not exactly this wealth of free time.
I know. It is like a classic misconception that you can like work from home and like have your, you know, baby or little kid with you. And like those are actually the, you know, the hardest things. Some of the hardest days are like when you actually have something you have to do, because as I'm sure you both know, or you know, possibly still remember, it's just like the second you plan for something that's gone. Like that time, you can just throw that away. And I'm tempting it right now because my 2-year-old is like napping upstairs. And I think we have a schedule locked in where like he's asleep for the next couple of hours, but I'm sure today will be the day that he decides to like wake up and like not go back to sleep.
So we could have a fourth guest is what you're saying.
We could. We could. Yeah.
So you have a son who's 2.
I do. That's right.
And you stay at home?
Yeah. When he was born, we were still touring off of Highlights. It was starting to slow down anyway. He was born in October, and I did some touring while my wife was on maternity leave. And then she went back to work at around 4 months, and I took over. It was one of those things for us that wasn't like necessarily our plan. It just sort of lined up with me being the one with the flexible schedule and also being up for it. And, you know, 2 years later, here I am. I mean, now our schedule is a little bit more mixed. I have a sitter one day a week, and my wife is usually off on Fridays. So it's a little bit more of a balanced schedule, but it took us a while to get here. But I've been with him, yeah, a lot.
That is a lot. Did you find it, I mean, did you find it, was it an easy transition? Was it like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, how did you find parenthood?
You know, it took a while, like the, with like a 4 month old, like there's a lot of, you know, it's just kind of juggling. And like, I gave myself like a long rope to like try to figure things out and like, you know, get him to drink milk from a bottle was like our first challenge. And napping and like those really basic things. So like several months went by before I started to like think about my own identity again, I guess. And you know, I guess the challenge for me has never really necessarily been him, and like that has gone fairly well. Like the challenge has for me has been largely about, you know, figuring out what my identity is now. I've been having challenges. It's actually the second year is a lot harder than the first year with a toddler. I found to be a lot more challenging than a little tiny baby. But it's hard for me to separate the challenges of parenting with like the challenges of being a parent in this time. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I can't tell if I'm having a harder time with having a toddler or if I'm having a hard time because I've been in this for like 2 years now.
And you need a break.
And I need a break. Yeah.
That is a very real struggle.
Once they become mobile, it really changes the game.
Yeah. I mean, you think, you know, before I had kids, I used to think, oh, if, you know, if I could start with a 2-year-old, I would, because like the baby stuff, like it seems to be more about bonding with the mom, and I'm not sure what I would do during that time. But like now it turns out like I'm like a baby person. Like I love that. And like, I want another little baby.
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny because Heather and I have been talking both on the podcast and off about how there is this inexplicable change that occurs after you have a child. And it's something that is completely impossible to grasp beforehand and then completely impossible to explain after it occurs. And that it sounds like that's sort of what you're experiencing. You know, you thought one thing and now you've realized it's completely the opposite.
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely for like the little baby time, I got much more out of that period of his life than I expected to. I thought it was really, that time was just going to be like, you know, you have this totally dependent thing, blob, and your job is just to like keep it functioning. But I really loved that. I really loved that. I felt it was like a lot more than that. In terms of my expectations, I mean, you know, they say like there's never a right time to have a kid. There's never a good time to like become a parent. And I think that that's kind of true. But I also think that there is a time, like if you're, the more willing you are to give up parts of your identity, I think the more ready you are. So like I had kind of stopped doing a lot of my going out, and like I was like working as a musician, and like that was I wrapped my work and my entertainment sort of schedule into the same boat already. And like when I was home and not on tour and not going out, I was like happy to be home. So like in that sense, like I was somewhat, I think, prepared and ready for this role that I now play.
And you said that you're finding like, are you struggling to find your identity as a parent? How that all fits into the larger scope of who you are? Are you struggling with that?
Now I am. I mean, now it's like, you know, I got through like this first year or 2 years, like he's going to go to school soon. And like, I kind of like anyone who like takes time off of their job, I'm like looking up and like trying to figure out like where I fit in outside of this, outside of my nest here. I put a lot of stuff on hold and stopped thinking a lot about things. And like, I stopped using a lot of my creative brain, and, my adult brain, really, like you spend a lot of time just with a little child or with other little children and parents and doing the like parent talk. And like, there's like a huge part of my brain that I just like haven't been using. And I'm I realized that early on. So like, I've taken this time to like meet with people, like every free chance I get, like I go and like meet with somebody who works in music and to see, to like learn what they're doing and to work on my own podcast, which is something that I do also. And I've tried to flex that part of my brain, but like you don't really use it if you're not, I mean, it's not the same as like having a full-time job where like that part of you is being used, you know, you're flexing that part of your brain and your identity like all the time. So it's, that's been kind of a struggle, especially with the band too. Yeah.
Because Eric had a baby recently, didn't he?
He has a 1-year. Yeah, he's about a year behind me. So that sort of kept the paternity leave for the band going for sure longer than it might have otherwise. But yeah, so he's in the same, he's in about the same exact position that I am, just a bit further behind.
And so are you guys on indefinite hiatus or?
I don't want to say indefinite hiatus. Like it's very hiatus-y. Like it's very much so. This kids album was like an idea that I had for a way for us to like make something quickly, use our creative brains, but also like create something that is like 100% reflective of our lived realities right now as like stay-at-home dads, which I think is like a very good place to start creatively. Like when you're making something that's totally reflective of like your lived experience, like that's a great starting point. Whereas if you're writing songs, it's like, it's a mishmash of like your experience, like your influences, like just abstract ideas. Like, it always comes somewhat out of your reality, but this was such like a concrete starting point for us to do like a kid's record of, we don't even have to write the songs. We just have to write the music. So that was a way for us to like work together quickly with like totally different stakes, like totally different set of expectations than we might have if we were like trying to start up the engine of Tan Lines after taking all this time off with all of these new questions in our heads.
Mm-hmm. I should probably mention here, like I came to know Tan Lines in 2012 when you guys released Mixed Emotions, and it came up on a recommended list. The music service was called RDO. I don't know if you
are
familiar with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I discovered the album then and completely, I mean, you don't really binge listen to albums, but that's kind of what I did. And loved, 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 loved the sound, especially the song None Such, which I put on my year in list. It made like, it was like my second favorite song. There's something about None Such that reminds me of a specific Janet Jackson song from the 80s, kind of a sentimental one. Somebody told you guys that the Mommy Blogger had written about your song, right?
Yeah, I think it was my sister, who's a big fan of yours, Heather. And she's like, this is a really big deal. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, yeah. And I remember like at the time, like I was like, she has more followers than Pitchfork. And I was like, this is an incredible way to reach people. This is like, it was really like an eye-opening kind of form of exposure for us that was like totally new and really exciting. Like when you do music, like you're always trying to reach people who like don't read about music. Mm-hmm. Like that's for us, that was like always a huge goal. And so seeing that you sharing our music and like talking about what it meant to you as somebody who, you know, whose audience I imagine is like outside of the music space, was like, we were very excited about that.
And so excited, at least, that you guys followed me back on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so this is one of the funny stories. You guys were touring for the second album, and I saw that you guys were coming, And I was like, I'm coming to your show. I can't wait. And you're like, oh, you know what? I'll put your name down, you know. And then if like anybody else you want to come to the show, I'll put your name down on the list.
Yeah, we didn't have Salt Lake City. Never been there before, never played there before. Like, you could have had our entire guest list to yourself if you wanted it that night.
And so I think I'm direct messaging with like the social media manager for Tan Lines. Like, I think I'm communicating with like an 18-year-old like intern. And you guys played on a Sunday night and I was with my friends and you were like, is there any place to get a good, you know, is there any place to eat in this town? Not knowing that Salt Lake City closes down on Sunday because of the religious aspect. And we had just gotten a pizza and we were her apartment was like right around the corner from the venue. And I was like, well, we've got pizza here if you want to come have a piece. And I'm thinking that an 18-year-old intern is going to show up. And when it was you, like, I literally almost shit my pants. I was like, what the fuck? And my friend could barely speak. She was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I was like, I've been speaking to Jesse this whole time. What?
Yeah. That, you know, we are not a large enterprise, but we're involved in every part of this. And that, so yeah, of course that was me. It never even occurred to me that to identify myself. Clearly that was very funny.
And then I honestly thought that you were being coy about it. I thought like, oh, I'm just going to surprise her. I'm just going to show up and it's going to be me.
No, you had to explain I remember how, it was like a strange meeting because you were processing that you were expecting somebody else. And I didn't, you had to really explain that to me because it never occurred to me to even, you know, identify myself. Like, I'm just so used to the scale and size of our operation and like how, you know, hands-on we are about everything. And like that, the idea like that you had this completely different idea of us would never really cross my mind.
Well, is it always you on Twitter or is it sometimes Eric? Do you primarily run it?
I run it. I took a lot of time off actually from, I haven't figured out Twitter in like 2017 or 2018. So like I've taken a big step back from that. But that was always me.
And I believe that night, you actually told me, you were like, yeah, my wife is, it's your wife or your girlfriend?
My wife, yeah.
Your wife, yeah. You're like, yeah, my wife is pregnant and we're going to get into the whole parenthood thing. And I was like, oh my God, congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I spent that whole tour, like, you know, moderately freaked out, I would say. came back and had 3 days to like pack up and move my whole apartment, and Hannah was 7 months pregnant. And yeah, that was, and the tour was honestly, it was half good, half really hard. You know, it was, that was a strange time.
Yeah. What's hard? Is it just physically rough?
I think you can get used to the schedule. Just like, I think you can get used to like any schedule where it's like, if you tell yourself, this is my job, like, you know, it's a strange schedule. I think you can get used to that. I think I could do that right now. Like, the hard part about touring, and this is actually similar in some ways to like having a small, tiny child to take care of, is like every day is kind of the same schedule. Like, the parameters of your day are the same. Like, you wake up, you drive, you know, you sound check, you play a show, you go to the hotel or whatever. But like on any given day, you don't know how each of those components is going to be. So like the day you think the show is going to suck, like it's the best show. And like the day you think, oh, it's an easy drive, like something's going to happen on the drive and like you'll be late. And like, it's just like, that's the maddening part about it. It's like a combination of really predictable and really unpredictable. And that's very hard to like get used to. And that's also like why I said, it's like, you know, having a small child, it's like, his day, my son's day, like they're pretty routine at this point, but just like one day, you know, breakfast is like a nightmare. And then like the next day it's completely fine. And like, it's just, it's, that's like part of the maddening thing about being a, you know, a parent to a small child. And that was one thing that was hard about touring. It was also like, it was just like a lot of the shows were like not great. I don't know. I mean, it was fun. We had a band on that tour and it was really fun playing with them. And like, you find ways to like have fun playing a show, even if there aren't that many people there or whatever. But like, yeah, it was sort of, you know, it wasn't great. It just wasn't great. There were like the sellout shows and like the huge, the big crowds were like kind of few and far in between. And like, we were just starting out this album cycle and like, it just wasn't feeling great. And it ended up being fine. Like, we got to go back to a bunch of cities and play bigger venues, but things were sort of slowing down. You know, the momentum of the band was like shifting a little bit. So it was, mm-hmm. that was hard.
So I saw you in Salt Lake City and then you guys didn't play Nonesuch.
Yes, that's right.
You didn't play Nonesuch in Salt Lake City, but I had a meeting I had to take in New York and it happened to be the days that you were playing. I forget what the venue was, but it was in December of 2015. Mm-hmm. And I was there, the meeting got canceled, but I had already booked the trip. And I was dating a guy who lived in Manhattan. I had to be, he didn't want to introduce me to his children just yet. And I completely understood that. So I stayed out of his apartment and just wandered around New York City until the time of the concert. Hmm. And I texted him and I said, the concert's starting. Are you going to be here? And he was just like, I have had the longest day with my children. I am not coming to a concert. And mind you, we're in a long distance relationship and I have just flown across the country to see him. And I was so hurt and I stayed for most of the show and then I just started bawling. Like I was in a really bad place and I wandered back to his apartment in Chelsea, walked back. You guys played Nonesuch in your encore.
Yeah.
That I missed.
Yeah, and just think about how it would have missed opportunity for like an incredibly emotional impact for a song, and for considering what you're telling me about your state. We both missed an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
The relationship did not work out and that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah. I'm gathering that.
There's no grudges held or anything.
No,
2.5
no
years later.
Except for missing that, sounds like, is still on your mind.
Well, me dating someone who doesn't want to come out and see like one of my favorite bands, it's a red flag. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so your son was born soon after that, right?
Yeah, he was born in October of 2015. So
So you were touring still?
Yeah, we were still touring when he was born. And so that show in December, I think that was Webster Hall that you saw us at.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was like a couple months old. Yeah. I kind of wish I had done more touring during my wife's maternity leave. I mean, it felt at the time like kind of crazy and hard to do, but like in retrospect, I think we probably could have handled like more of that.
Did it feel like almost like hitting a wall going from the pace of touring? I mean, I know you said that there's similarities in terms of the predictable unpredictability of it, but it sounds like, I mean, you toured into her maternity leave and then went on hiatus and became a full-time dad. Did it feel sudden, that shift?
It did. Also, I should say, like, part of that was because like we sort of expected that we would be touring a bit longer, like doing more like weekends and like festival stuff. And like I said, things were kind of starting to slow down and like we had a few offers at like going through the spring, but like it kind of was a combination of like our choice and also not our choice at all. So like I was kind of hoping and expecting to like sort of taper this edge by like touring and then like doing some weekends or like a 3-4 day, you know, jaunt here and then festivals and like sort of, you know, yeah, taper that transition. But like it happened real quick. And so we did a few things like after I took over and like booked a few random gigs and like here and there doing stuff. But like it's the band slowed down and also you know, once I was like being a full-time parent, you know, like the, we weren't just like up to do anything. So like,
right,
the opportunities that we weren't just like, let's go here, let's do this, like find us a gig here to our agent. It was sort of just like, we were like looking for like good, you know, opportunities and offers that we wouldn't like lose money or break even on. And like, yeah, it just wasn't, it just had kind of slowed down, and it was a, it turned out to be like a pretty abrupt transition for me.
How was, I mean, did you experience sleepless nights during those first few months?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Like I was saying, like you can get used to any schedule, and I think you can, at least, or I should say I can, I think I can get used to any schedule. Like I, so, you know, the beginning, like a newborn, yeah, it's like just kind of chaos. And, but we had a, we got lucky. Like our son is pretty much a sleeper. And like within a couple of months, he was like kind of sleeping through the night, and we got pretty lucky with that. So the schedule is still like totally different than my life before I had kids. Like I haven't set an alarm in like 2.5 years. And, but you know, yeah, it, my schedule changed a lot, but like it, that wasn't that hard for me to get used to.
I think you're spot on with the way you describe it though, relating it to touring, that it's super predictable with this layer of unpredictability. And as horrifying as this might be, that actually doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It kind of,
I was afraid of
it. It yeah. changes, but it stays the same. I mean, both Heather and I, our days in a lot of ways are very, very, very routine. And sometimes you fall into that and think this is great. There's a routine, and then some disaster occurs and everything is completely thrown off. And then you settle back in, and then the same thing happens again, and you just never know.
Yeah, I was afraid you'd say that, but I can already see it. Like the challenges are like now becoming like emotional challenges. Like whenever you get used to like any particular set of things, like it's just going to be something else. Like the parameters will change, and I see that already. How old are? Sorry, but tell me how old your son is.
My son will be 14 this month.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have like nephews, but like I've learned since becoming a parent that like no one cares about your nephews or nieces. Like parents don't like, they're like, that's great. You don't really know because that's your nephew, but I'm glad that like you have spent a few moments with a child that age.
I mean, in a sense, yes, but I think it's, you never know how to handle a given age, and then suddenly you're halfway through that age and you realize you've been handling it and you still don't really know how, you just have. I mean, I don't know. Heather, you're like a month into 14 now.
People always talk about how, you know, parenting doesn't really ever get any easier. The problems just are just different. And there are days, so my oldest daughter is 14 and I love her. She's amazing. So she's going to forgive me for what I'm about to say. But there are times where I'm like, is this, would I choose this over, you know, the tantrums at 3 years old? Because this really, really fucking sucks. Because this problem right now that I'm dealing with is really, really, really goddamn hard. Was it harder than when she was throwing tantrums? I don't think it's necessarily harder. It's just different. It's almost like which problems are the ones you like better.
Yeah. I don't even think it's harder so much as that I think when they're 2 and 3, the tantrums, they happen and they're done. But as they get older, the problems just sometimes take longer to resolve. So it's not just to sit down, have a conversation or get over this one hump. It might take a few days and it evolves and the emotions change. And so it's just totally different.
The stakes, it sounds like the stakes are a little bit different at that age.
Yeah. Well, you even said now that like he's like showing a lot more emotion than he was when he was just a little blob, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, I am dealing with, you know, his emotions are in my care. I have to be very, very careful.
Mm-hmm. My approach, like the book, the like the I have this, my parenting book. Like, I have a couple ideas for parenting books, but not that I'm actually going to write them. These are just ideas. I'm an idea person. Like, my follow through is kind of a problem, but like, I'm an idea person. But so, like, but my approach, like, with him when he was little, like, the book is like how to have a second child the first time around. Like, I met all these second time parents who, like, you know, I met so many people out there here in Brooklyn, like, walking around with a little baby, and like, the second time parents just, like, they couldn't be bothered with you. Like, they didn't have time for that. Like, they, you know, they were involved and they loved their children, but they're like not hanging over them. They're not, they don't seem to be that worried about anything. And like, they have sort of, I feel like, project less anxiety on their children than a first time parent does. So like, for me, I always, my thing I've been trying to focus on a lot is, like, I think for a lot of the issues and things that you go through, like, trying to figure out, like, how to be a parent, like, I think the anxiety that you're projecting and surrounding your child with is usually more damaging than whatever the thing you're worried about is. So I've tried to sort of carry that mentality around with him, and like, that was kind of fine for a while, but like, now, like, yeah, we're into this zone where like, he's like a, you know, a person, an individual with like feelings, and like, it's not something I'm anxious about. It's just more of just like, how do we like get along with each other? And then
that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah. Like, I was spent so much time when he was a baby, like, trying not to worry about doing things right or doing things wrong. That's the mentality of someone who's like separate from their child who's in their care. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like looking at this thing just staring at me. And like, now that he's two, it's like, yeah, we're like sharing the space. My joke that I tell people is like, I used to have a baby, now I have a roommate. Like, that's the difference between two and one, you know? And it's, that's hard. My follow-up book is how to have a first child the second time around. So like, when you have your second kid, how do you not totally ignore them? How do you give them more of that attention that like you would give your first child?
Interesting. So
that'll be my next challenge, hopefully.
Well, you have tons of free time now, Jesse, so you can write those both.
That's so true. I totally read that, and I totally thought the same thing. I was like, this is a person who hasn't lived this life.
Exactly.
Yeah. It sort of goes to my the book that I want to write about divorce. Called Marry the Person That You Would Want to Be Divorced From.
Oof. Right. Yeah.
Cause I actually once said that to a person at the gym here in Utah, and it was the wrong thing to say. We are never gonna get divorced. Just because you did doesn't mean that I am.
Right.
You know, like you said, there's all this stuff that you learn after the fact that you wish you'd known before, and like, just chill out.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned early on, and I thought this was a really interesting way to put it, and probably because it's just been so long for me too, since my son was that age, but you said several months went by before I started thinking about my own identity. And that's a really interesting way to put it. I mean, you do essentially put all of yourself aside to give all of yourself to someone else. And you do kind of lose sight of who you are. And I bring that up because I think it's interesting with this new album, because you're taking children's songs that are very much your son, but putting your own identity on top of them with very Tan Lines sound. So it's like you've found your identity again, but now it's permanently shifted. Not that you'll continue with children's songs, but it's made a permanent impact.
Definitely. Yeah. That is something that feels good, like, to actualize yourself in a way creatively where it's like, I'm a dad and I spend 80% of my time with my 2-year-old, but like, I'm still a guy in a band who has these tools, and like, how do I combine those things to create something that's like very reflective, as I said, like, of my experience in reality. And like, it turned out, it was like, you know, fun and, you know, not that hard to do. And I think the record is like the fact that you hear it that way. Like I Eric and I like made this and we were just like, this is better than it needs to be, you know, like for what we want to do. Like we're like pleasantly surprised. They're like, this is good stuff. Like also like, so that was one part of it, was sort of like a creative exercise and an exercise in like utilizing all sides of our identities as both full-time dads and also as musicians. And like, that felt good to do that. You know, then the other side of it was just like responding to a kind of like need and like something we talked a lot about like music for kids, just sort of being a wasteland and asking ourselves like, why is Rafi like still popular like 35 years later? And it's like, the answer seems to be that like parents can tolerate the sound of his voice. There's something about his just like his nature that's like tolerable. Like it's fine. Like I would never choose to listen to that, but like if my kid wants to hear The Wheels on the Bus, like that version is like not grating. It's fine, you know. So like that's a record that I think of as like 70% for kids and the 30% for adults. And like the majority of like kids music, I think, is like closer to like 90% or more for kids and 0 to 10% for adults. We're like, maybe we can try to make something that's 50-50. And that was sort of a more sort of practical way about looking at the creative challenge of doing this. But I should also say that like Eric and I both feel fairly strongly that we don't want to play in front of a room full of children ever. So
that's fair.
That's the limit of like merging our identities, I would say. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I've met lots of local like musicians that like are doing great work performing for kids around Brooklyn, and they seem to be making a pretty good living doing it. But it's just, I don't think it's something that we would be great at. So it's not something that we really want to do. I would love to do like a theme song for a kids show. Like that would be a great result from this project.
Oh, you guys would be great at that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I would love that. But it was really more just like seeing if we could do this thing, do it well, and knowing that like their parents will appreciate it.
Oh, I could have totally used this 14 years ago. I put my foot down and, you know, I let her watch Barney. I let her watch the Teletubbies and Dora. And those songs are like, those songs are like cancer to the brain. But whenever we would drive anywhere, like children's music was off limits. Because I just didn't want to kill the family by driving the car into a tree. We only listened to like adult music, period. Like I could have used this.
Yeah, that's what some of my friends were saying. Like they were asking me like, well, why don't you just like, your music is already pretty kid friendly, or like, why don't you write original kid songs? And like, I thought like a couple of things. Like one is that like, you know, cool parents, like they play like adult music for their kids for as long as they can, you know, mm-hmm. like you play the, you know, whatever reggae or light rock or like whatever you're into that's like kid friendly that you also like for a long time. But at a certain point, like your kid is going to come back from daycare or school and you're going to be really excited that like they know the words to Old MacDonald Had a Farm. Like you're going to like... You want to play the hits, you know? It's just like right. being on stage. It's like you want to play the songs that the people know. Like that's what feels really good and people really respond to. And so like that was one thought, was like, yeah, we should just like do these songs that kids already know. That's what they want to hear. And if that works and we're, you know, this thing is something people want more of, like we'll write some songs. You know, we have ideas for songs, but that was the thinking there. And yeah, you're totally right. Like I just did a 4-hour drive alone with my son this weekend and like, you know, we listened to my music for a while, but then at some point, you know, I needed to throw on, you know, some kid songs. He was just asking for it over and over again. And So mm-hmm. we listen to the same stuff over and over again. It's well, just, yeah.
Yeah, it's rough.
Hi there, this is Kendra Adachi, and I host the Lazy Genius Podcast. And I need to make sure that you have heard about the new KFC Chicken Nuggets. You have never had nuggets like these before, 100% white meat and hand-breaded in KFC's original recipe. KFC has been a family favorite for years, and now we can get all of the delicious KFC flavor we love in one amazing chicken nugget. Order new Kentucky Fried Chicken Nuggets, now available at participating KFCs near you.
John's son is actually, isn't he a Tan Lines fan?
He is. Yeah, it's interesting because I think it was back in 2012 when you found Tan Lines and shortly thereafter shared it with me. Mm-hmm. So I started listening to it and my son immediately latched onto it. He still listens to it and he is at school right now.
I love that.
Incredibly pissed off that I'm talking to you because he said he has so many questions and he asked if he could actually come home. I told him to write them down
okay.
for me, and then I would send them to you. So I'm sorry but that I put that obligation on you, but he was very adamant.
No, for sure. I would love to know what his questions are. I'd love to do my best to answer them.
Oh, he would love that. He was so jealous. And it was interesting because when the new record came out, I put it on, and of course he's almost 14, so Row, Row, Row Your Boat comes on.
Oh boy.
And no, but it was interesting because he recognized the beat and he's like, why are you playing this? And I didn't say anything. And a short while after the lyrics come on, he goes, is this Tan Lines? I said, yeah, it is. They're doing kids songs. And I stopped it and he said, no, you can leave it on, I guess. It's fine. And listen to the whole thing. And he didn't complain. I mean, I don't expect it to be a repeat listen, but the fact that he knows your music, identified it, and wanted to hear these songs that are clearly targeted at a younger audience, I think says a lot about how you spun them.
Well, that makes me feel very good. It makes me feel very good, and also like I'm kind of, you know, he seems to be like a pretty open-minded listener, and I appreciate that. I'm worried, I guess, about the... you know, maybe 17, 18-year-old who's like, these guys, they used to be cool, they used to be good, and now they're like doing this. Why are they doing that? But also, I appreciate that tells me that he is a good listener and that, you know, he has a ear for sound and vibe and he connected it. That's really good.
Yeah, no, he got into it.
The good news, I think, is that because of me being insistent about listening to my music in the car, my 14-year-old, she has an Apple account. I use Spotify. She uses Apple, whatever. I don't care. and I know we're taking money away from artists, but I go to the shows and I buy merchandise. So.
Oh, it's okay. I'm very like, just listen and tell your friends, like post about us on your blog and we'll be happy.
And, the other day she said we were on the way to school and she's like, can I play a couple songs from my playlist? I'm like, sure, you know, hook up to the Bluetooth. And oh my God, my kid has great taste in music. Like, I was like, who is this? And who is this? And
who is she listening to?
I don't even know. It's just like, she's like, well, Apple said that I would probably be interested. It's like Discover Weekly on Spotify.
Wow.
So there's all these artists that I've never heard of with an incredible sound to it. And so I started taking notes and I'm going to put them on my own playlist.
And she's a musician, right? She plays.
She plays piano, begrudgingly, but she's she's so good at it that I'm not letting her quit. I get a lot of varying feedback about that from people who were forced to do piano lessons during their childhood. Mm-hmm. So many people have said to me, I wish that my mother had not let me quit, but her talent is really, really, really apparent. She's very, very good at it. She just doesn't like to practice.
How would you feel if she wanted to be a musician?
Oh, I would love that. I would love for her to go into any part of music.
Is there a competitive part to her? Like, did she do recitals or competitions?
Yeah, so a requirement from her teacher, it's called Federation. Mm-hmm. And twice a year she has to play in front of judges and they basically judge how well she played the pieces.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
She well, that's the part that she loves the most is, I mean, it's really hard getting to that day because the pieces that she plays are really, really incredibly difficult. And
I'm assuming this is, it's classical.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, oh, really quickly. So she loves the accomplishment of playing in front of the judges and getting the feedback from them because it's always like 100%. It's always been, this is the most amazing piano player. She's awesome. She's graceful. She feels it. She's the best person we've seen today. Like, she loves that part of it. And this weekend, she downloaded a song by Keen, I think, off the internet and printed it out. And I was walking the dog and I walked inside and she's like, I'm sorry, I used your printer without your permission. And I'm like, you don't need to apologize. I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, well, I found the sheet music for the song that I love. And I was like, this right here is what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. This is what I want you to do. I want you to find the music that you want to play and learn how to play it. That's why I want to give you the talent. Mm. Or at least bring out that talent in her. Did you take piano lessons, by the way?
I did, and my parents let me quit. it sounds like she has a gift that I don't feel like I ever had or I never honed. And I can't, necessarily relate to. She sounds like what I would describe as like a real musician. And I, recognize that like I'm also a real musician as someone who like lives off of being a musician. But, that what you're describing, like I never either could have had the natural ability to pull off or the discipline to hone. And that gift is like, it's incredible. And I'm just kind of curious. Like I've talked to a lot of people who have like come up through either music school or came or did competitions. And like, that is a very foreign concept to me. Just like music and having like any sort of competitive nature or being graded on it, like it or being I've totally from the kind of punk DIY background where it's just like, it's cool to make stuff. Like you don't need talent. Like you just make a thing. And if it's good and you put it out there, put more energy into like the emotion or the vibe behind the music than the craft of it is my setting. But having said that, I wish that I had spent more time honing whatever gift or talent that I have, because at a certain point I was like, I wish I had these skills and tools and like that I had never really refined. And I think we would have really benefited if we had had a little bit more of that. It's nice to hear you say that you love her to be a musician, because that's one of the last things I would want my son to become.
so really quickly, her father took lessons throughout his childhood and all the way until he left home for college. And when he got to college, he joined a ska band. Yeah. And he like a ska band that actually toured with No Doubt in the 90s. And his parents were furious. His parents were so angry that he was using his talent that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of the opposite. I'm sort of like, I would love for her to take this innate talent that she has and make a use of it.
Yeah, it sounds like she's at a crossroads, like where the right sort of influence or outlet, if it comes to her, or she finds it at the right time, like she can really own this gift and like turn it into something that probably satisfies an additional part of her identity that's like emerging right now. And I hope that she finds that.
Yeah, me too. But you wouldn't want your son to go into
no.
No.
And now I'm truly becoming my parents when I say that.
There's not even any hesitation when you say that either. It's just flat no.
No. Yeah. I mean, I want him to do music. I want him to love music. I don't regret the choices that I've made, like organizing my life around being a musician. But it's just a difficult path. It's like so many things are, either not in your hands or if they are, it's just, you don't realize that they're in your hands when they are. It's just a tough life. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. it can be a tough life. And, you know, I just, yeah, for him, like, yeah, I want to be an architect or something, like, where you're just like, got to keep on build. It's creative and it's like, you know, you can always apply it wherever you live. And I don't know. I'm truly becoming my parents as I say this. I really feel that way. Isn't that natural? Like, I mean,
in some ways, sadly, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's inevitable. But even your career as a musician, I think the influence that will have on the music that he listens to will be invaluable. I mean, I know even with my son, and Heather, you probably experienced that too. Like, I can see when he started to make his own choices with music, mm-hmm. I could see the influence that what I listened to had on his choices. I mean, he listens to everything from Daft Punk to Rage Against the Machine to Matt and Kim. And I mean, he just picks this random stuff, but he always has a reason for it. Like, there's always something about it. Maybe there's a line he really likes or a beat that he really likes or something about the song. And every time he talks about it, it's an awesome feeling to know that I kind of contributed to not only shaping it, but to helping him find a path in music and what he likes and why he likes it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my parents listened to nothing but Anne Murray, Dan Fogelberg, and the Bee Gees. That was it. That was my entire musical upbringing. And I really didn't discover music until I got to college. And I was like, God damn it, there's a lot of stuff out here I didn't know about. Like, I don't think I knew who Jimi Hendrix was until, like, I got to college. Seriously. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, but on the flip side, Heather, like, my parents were, you know, hippies in the 60s and 70s. And, like, they passed me, like, pretty decent reference points. Like, but that was just, like, my parents' music. Like, I didn't want to listen to that. Yeah. Like, I've, you know, sort of just, like, threw that out. And, like, years and years later, I was like, oh, I get Bob Dylan now. I guess, like, he is good at making songs. Like, I just had completely thrown that out. But I do think some of, like, the core principles that I just, like, absorbed by being in a house with, like, decent music influences around me, like, persisted.
Yeah.
So it just sort of takes a while to get back to it. Everyone, but, like, part of, like, becoming a young person who cares about music that I think is essential, and it might not be anymore, but from the stories you have both told me, I think it is like discovery, like feeling like you discovered this song or artist, and like is such a crucial part of forming that connection with the artist. Mm-hmm. Whether you are discovering it yourself or whether it's like Apple suggesting it and it connecting, or even if it's like the old days where it's like some, you know, cool older person lets you listen to something. It's like there's still that moment of discovery where the song or the music or the artist connects with it on like an emotional level. That's like essential. It has to be self-driven. Like, everyone has had the experience where like someone sat you down and was like, listen to this song, it's amazing, and like put it on and then just stares at you while you're listening to it. And like, that's the worst way to listen to music that there is. Like, there's no worst way to listen to music than that. So that's why, and the reason that is such an awkward experience that everyone has is because like the best way to listen to music is that like feeling of discovery when it connects on your own terms. So mm-hmm. whether or not like you get it from your parents, like I am fortunate, I think, and ultimately because like I got pretty good values and influences that just, like I said, seeped in, which is, but still I had to go through that process myself of like discovery.
That was exactly my upbringing with music with my parents. And I rejected it all for the exact same reason.
Yeah.
And it was, in hindsight, it was excellent music, but it just mm-hmm. wasn't because they listened to it.
And that's one of the reasons I think like we have such clear, like generational music that like in this country or where, around the world, everywhere. It's just like every generation like goes through a thing where like the older people are like, this isn't real music. It's because it's like, it has to happen in your time, like in your way, and that has to connect to that sense of discovery for it to have real mm-hmm. emotional resonance. And like, once that window closes, like you can keep that window open for a long time. Like you can keep that open-mindedness and window open. Some people can keep it open their whole lives. But for, I think a lot of people, it happens between, you know, adolescence and, you know, maybe the extended adolescence or whatever, when like you are just wide open story. And that's, you know, for a lot of people, unfortunately, that like that window closes. Not you, Heather. Like you're discovering tan lines, obviously, like well into parenthood.
Yeah.
But you're the I imagine that you're exceptional in that way.
Well, music is a huge part of my life. Back to a point you just brought up, when Prince died, I took it very hard. I was in the kitchen and I was like, Lita, you have to listen to this song. You have to listen to this song by Prince. And I turned on Purple Rain and I'm like staring at her. She's listening to it and she's like, okay. And I'm like, this is Prince. This is Prince. And she just didn't get it. She didn't get it at all.
It's the worst. And when you're making music, like, and like you're working on a record, like there's going to be those times where like the label guy comes over and like, you got to play it and you all sit around in a room and like play something. Like you can feel like it's a very real thing that like music sounds different with different people. And when you're putting different expectations on the person, you're asking for something from them, like all of those that's to me is like the magical component to music. Like the part you mm-hmm. can't identify, like it just like listening to Purple Rain that day, playing it for your daughter and it not connecting was probably the worst Purple Rain has ever sounded to you. Like it just is. You're just like, this, something's missing from this song that I care about. Like there's a real magic to it. Like it sounds different depending on who's in the room, mm-hmm. you know, what, and you can hear it through their ears. And it's like one of the things I've learned from being a musician, that like I'm very grateful, like I've gotten the chance to like experience and think about and like understand, because I really believe that like there's like that thing is like the magical part that you can't describe about music.
Well, isn't it also like it's who's there, but it's their in what their intention is of listening to it. And I'm saying this from a place, I'm obviously not a musician, I've never done it, but I imagine, you know, clearly you have a career as a musician, so that's your livelihood. But when the record guy comes in to listen to the songs, to a degree, he's thinking, can I sell these? Are these going to sell? Mm-hmm. But it's not that every time you sit down to write a song, you're thinking, I wonder how much the song is going to make. Like you're writing it from a very different place. But sitting in a room with someone that you know is listening to it from the business standpoint is just totally different. I mean, he might love it, but you also know that he's loving it for a very different reason.
Yeah. You know, that's definitely true. And like it, you know, it's great when everything like lines up, where it's like, this is a, you know, where it's like, this is a great song. We feel about it amazing creatively. And also like, we think people will like it. It's easy to sell to people. Like, that's great. But like, that's very hard to do. So like, you don't think about that when you're writing songs. Like there's part of your brain, I think, when once you're like a professional musician, like, and you're not like a pure artist type musician, which I would never describe myself as, where like you're thinking about your audience and you're thinking about people who've never heard you, and like that stuff's all in there. But like, I don't think most musicians are thinking about just like, you can't just think about that and expect to also be like creatively fruitful. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You kind of have to just like rely on the creative part of you and satisfy that, because at the end of the day, like that's all you really get. Like you can't control whether people hear your music or if people like your music or where it's going to go. So like at the end of the day, like all I really get to have some control over is my relationship to the work. And so you revert to that place, I think, just instinctively when you're like making music. You're just like, just make something that you want to listen to or you feel strongly about or says what you want to say. And if you do that well, you know, hopefully it will connect with people and people will buy it or whatever it is, or people will love it or people will share it, or any of those things that can come from that. But at the end of the day, all I really get is, you know, like I said, my relationship to that piece of music.
Mm-hmm. So to come full circle, mm-hmm. today is one of those days. So are you guys thinking about expanding your family?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. That's definitely. Mm-hmm. I want to. Mm-hmm. And so is my wife. And I think we're headed down that road, hopefully soon.
And does Eric want to expand his family as well?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't want to say for him. I mean, I've never heard him say no or yes particularly. So, it's definitely possible.
John and I talk about this quite frequently where we're like, we don't miss those days.
Nope. Which days?
The days of strollers and all the talk about baby carriers and yep. bottles and nap time and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No part of you? I mean, do you see a little baby? Do you want to like hold it and like, you know?
I want to hold it and I want to be able to give it back real
quick. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I have plenty of friends and family that have small children and I love them to death, but it's nice to love them for an hour or two and then move on. And I think especially, I mean, my son is almost 14, so it's been so long that I know there was a lot of good and a lot that I liked about it, but I also know that there's a lot of good now that's very different. So I just don't have the desire to go back. And I think that's why a lot of people have kids a couple years apart, because they're kind of in the same zone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm that's exactly what I was thinking. Like I'm at this place now where like I see like a newborn, I'm like, ugh, that seems so easy. Like you can just, you think it's hard, but like, you know, you can go out, you can do stuff. It's easy. You just like bring this little thing around. And like, I'm like, I miss those days of having just like a little baby. So I'm still like, I think you're right. I'm like still totally in it. And I can still relate to it. And so now's probably a good time.
Yeah. Now's the perfect time, I think, if you're jonesing for a baby.
I remember honestly at like 2 months, when he was like 2 months, I was like, let's have another. I'm ready right now. And my wife was like,
oh my God.
My wife was like, are you like, you first of all, don't have to carry and give birth to the child. So there's that. But also like chill. And then once we got to like a year, and things started to get kind of hard for me, I was like, okay, let's wait. And then we got to like 2 years. I'm like, okay, I'm glad I don't have a little baby right now.
Yeah.
But I keep imagining that like, oh, you know, three will be different. Like he'll have figured some stuff out and like, he'll, you know, we can have a baby and him. And, but I'm told that like two and three aren't that different. So mm-mm. We'll see.
Well, the other big arching question is, and I mean, I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but will there be another original Tan Lines album in the future?
Yeah, I wish I had a concrete answer for
I'll
you.
I'll take a maybe. Maybe's okay.
definitely maybe. Okay. Like the Oasis album.
Like the Oasis album.
Yeah. Definitely maybe. It's just right now it's very hard for me to and we're like an hour into this conversation. I can be totally honest, and not that I haven't been before, but like in terms of like work and career and the band and stuff, we haven't really gotten into that until now. It's like the thing that I'm really craving in my life is security and stability. And I know that sounds like the, you know, kind of classic, like had a kid, you know, trying to like buckle down, but also like, you know, my wife, you know, has held down, you know, a full-time job and she likes it and she's happy, but like I would like to give her the chance to have the flexible schedule for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, applying for jobs, full-time jobs or anything, but like when I think about the next couple of years, like, that's the thing that, like, I'd like to turn my experience as an artist and, like, talking to artists and understanding artists and, like, work for artists inside of what I think is a rapidly changing music industry. And I want to help create an industry that is more artist friendly than the one it's replacing. Like, that's the emerging passion that I'm starting to feel in my life. I'll always have music. And, like, so long answer to summarize, though, in terms of, like, to answer your question of will there be another Tailwinds album? I think that there will be or could be at some point in the near future, but, like, I don't see myself organizing my whole life around making Tailwinds music my career in the near future. So, like,
interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Like, doing this kids record was like a way to, like, make music, put it out, no stakes, you know, like, that felt really good for me right now. Whereas, like, the follow up album to Mixed Emotions Highlights, when, like, there was, like, I was focusing really hard on, like, growing the band and the career, like, felt pretty bad. And, like, I don't want to be back in that place right now. I want to be in the place where I'm, like, making music creatively from a creative place and also not having to, like, put all of my, organize my entire life around selling that.
Right. Making it purely for the love of making it.
Yeah. I mean, so I'd like to be in a place where I can do that. and also, like, have a place to use my experience and my creative brain and, like, my adult brain, which would be, you know, maybe something, some sort of role outside of just being a musician. So that's what I'm leaning towards in terms of what I'm looking to do in the next year of my life.
That is incredibly self-aware.
Yeah.
To know that about yourself. Yeah.
I mean, that's talking to me after, like, 2 years of, like, 1 year, the first year, like I said, we started this conversation, take it full circle. Like, the first year I didn't think that much about myself. And, like, but, like, the second year I've, like, intensely, when I've had the time and effort to, like, think about, like, what's next for me. So, like, that self-aware answer didn't emerge completely out of a vat. It wasn't pre-naturally self-aware. It was, like, after, like, sort of a year of, like, working this out and, like, talking to people and, like, starting to do some consulting and, like, things on the side that, like, I feel this way. Mm-hmm. Don't tell your son that answer.
I will. I'll keep that one to myself. Yeah. I will not share
that. The answer for him is the short one, the definitely maybe.
Definitely maybe.
Say definitely maybe. Yeah.
He actually likes Oasis, so that'll work out really well.
Great.
So we can find the kids' album on Spotify, on Apple, all the streaming services, right?
Everywhere. Okay. Yeah. If you can buy it from us on Bandcamp, if that's a place that you're comfortable using, that's a. Mm-hmm. That's like buying it at the merch table.
Bandcamp is, I've used it. So for anyone out there who hasn't heard of it, it's easy, totally worth it.
But in all honesty, like, I'd more important to me than just, like, spending $5 to buy it, like, just share it with, like, kids or, like, parents, new parents, share it with those people, because, like, that will just take it a lot further than that's more important to me than anything else.
Yeah, of course. And do you want to plug your podcast?
Please do.
Sure. Yeah. The show is called No Effects with Jesse Cohen. And I talk to musicians. It's also a, you know, manic rambling spiral of music talk. Like, the section of this where we're talking about music is what the show usually is, you know, with different artists. So, like, I've had members of The Strokes and Vampire Weekend and Tegan and Sarah and lots of musicians that you probably know. And we just sit down for an hour and we talk about what life is like being a working musician in 2018. And the show will be coming back in March. It'll be up from March through June, the next season.
Awesome.
Perfect. And it's available on iTunes?
Wherever you're listening to this right now, I really believe and hope that you can find my show also.
And it's worth looking at. We have people, some of our listeners reach out and say, we love the podcast. Do you have any recommendations on other podcasts? So to anyone listening to this episode, No Effects is totally worth checking out. It's excellent.
Thank you.
And they've only got like 100 episodes to catch up on before the new season starts.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
We cannot thank you enough for joining us today to talk about this. I was so excited because we had thought about reaching out to you to talk to you about fatherhood. And then you sent me, you're like, hey, guess what? I put together a kids album. And I'm like, wow, this is perfect. This is a perfect tie-in. So thank you so much.
And I told you this privately, but like, I really was looking forward to this. Like, I haven't really had an opportunity much to talk about the last couple years of my life. And that's one of the hard and isolating parts of this, as I'm sure every parent can identify with. But like, I was really looking forward to this. I really appreciate you having me on here.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great.
Thank you so much for your time. That was amazing.
His perspective. Amazing. It's honestly, it was great to hear from someone who is still in those very young years. And at that point of re-identifying with themselves, as weird as that sounds.
Well, he's only a couple of years younger than I am.
Right. So he's like in between us, basically. Okay.
Yeah. And he's going through this for the first time. You know, he's going through those first steps. And it's always interesting to me to hear older parents. Not that he's an older parent.
But I mean, not in his young 20s or mid-20s.
Not by today's standards. Yeah. It's always interesting to hear their perspective about those early days.
Yeah.
And I think it's adorable that he likes babies.
That was awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Jesse Cohen from Tan Lines. So starstruck by him. Like, I'm still trembling. I'm a little nervous still. That's why I couldn't form words.
You were well composed. It was good. It was all good.
You have no idea. When he walked in and I thought that I was going to be seeing the social media manager for Tan Lines and it was him, I literally lost my shit.
I remember you texted me. And it was something totally casual too. And then that was inserted into the text. Hey, I mean, I'm across the country and I lost my shit for you. So honestly, yeah, it's all good.
So if you guys have... See, I still can't talk.
So I'll take over for a minute here. So obviously, definitely check out the new album. Check out both of their album from 2012 and their album from 2015. Whether you stream them or buy them, it's well worth a listen. And it is all kid-friendly, so bear that in mind. That's always great. And if any of our listeners who are not completely starstruck have anything to add or any questions or any thoughts, or you know listen to the kids' album and want to say how amazing it is, definitely reach out to us via email, as always, which is stories@manicramblings.com, or on any of our social networks, which would be Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook @manicramblings. And we should probably also direct them to Tan Lines on Twitter, because even though Jesse says he hasn't figured it out, they're pretty damn good at Twitter. So you can find Tan Lines on Twitter @TanLines. Pretty simple.
And also when you Google, like, if you're like, I wonder what this band Tan Lines is, and you go to Google and you hit the image search.
Yeah, definitely include the word band when you search for Tan Lines, or you're going to get some different images.
Oh, man. Okay, well, until next time, definitely maybe. Many thanks to Tan Lines for the soundtrack, to Lisa Congdon for the cover art, and to Ryan Coomer for his expertise with the editing stuff.
Hey guys, it's Kayla Ewell from Directionally Challenged, a podcast about realigning your internal compass. New KFC chicken nuggets are finally here, and you have never had nuggets like these. All of the delicious KFC flavor you love in one amazing chicken nugget. 100% white meat, hand-breaded in KFC's original recipe. Order new Kentucky Fried Chicken nuggets, now available at participating KFC near you. Guys, they're finger-licking good.